You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk is an independent podcast production of Monster House, LLC. You can show your support by subscribing to our ad-free extended episodes at patreon.com/monstertalk. We want to grow our Monster Talk audience, and the easiest way to accomplish that is for listeners to leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes. Positive reviews have a huge impact and only take a moment.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
For several years, we've been expanding our Monster Talk footprint to include more video content, including examinations of movies allegedly based on real paranormal events, a series we call Debased on a True Story. Well, another series we host is produced by Matt Baxter, and it's called Ask a Paranormal Investigator. Matt spent many years looking at ghost stories, trying to find evidence of the supernatural or paranormal, and over that time, he found time and again there was a reasonable explanation for events that the average person might call ghostly. Scientific approaches to this type of material aren't always welcomed by the people experiencing them. Sometimes, for a variety of reasons, venues and individuals might, on some level, actually want there to be real supernatural activity at play. Well, today we're going to hear from Matt about his work investigating the Bullock Hotel in Deadwood, South Dakota.
Monster Talk.
Can you hear that? Do you hear that, Karen? Is that the sound of wagons and spurs and cowboy boots walking on old wooden porches?
Gee, what are you drinking?
Yep. I think I hear something. What? Wait, I hear the saloon doors. Who's that walking through the door now? What?
This is so atmospheric. It feels like we're in Deadwood,
yes.
South Dakota.
Well, no one said cocksucker yet, so I don't really feel like we're in Deadwood yet.
That's for the piss. Patrons, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll leave that. I'll beep that for the regular feed. So.
Someone had to say that, yes.
So who is this cowboy who's walked in on us here?
Well.
Nice. Welcome to the show, Matt Baxter.
I'm Matthew the Kid, and here to introduce myself. I'm Matthew Baxter. I am a paranormal investigator. Yeah, I'm here because I did an extensive investigation of, mainly the Bullock Hotel in Deadwood, South Dakota.
Right, but you're no stranger to the show.
Listeners will know Matt from his YouTube series, Ask a Paranormal Investigator. Kieran, you've known Matt for several weeks now. What's your relationship?
Husband and wife, paranormal investigator team, I guess you could say. But yeah, we've known each other for pretty much around the same time that you and I met, like, about 2009, around then. Matt has told me little bits of this investigation over the years, and we haven't done a show on Deadwood, and I thought it would be interesting to talk about. And I did already mention that this is Deadwood, South Dakota, because I was surprised to find that there are multiple Deadwoods in North America. There's one in California, one in Texas, and even one in Canada. I wasn't aware of that. I've always thought that Deadwood sounds ominous too, but I found out that the town was named by early settlers after the dead trees found in its gulch. So not as scary as you would think.
Yeah. That area was very revered by the Native Americans because of its spiritual sort of energy. And, you know, many psychics since then have claimed that Deadwood does rest on the convergence of ley lines, which, you know.
Oh, that explains everything. But I think this is just such an interesting place, and it has such an interesting history. And we're talking about the Old West, the Wild West. Can you tell us a little bit about what is the Wild West? I think most Americans know what it is, but for people from other countries, what is the Wild West? Old West, is it the same thing?
You know, it's pretty interchangeable. It depends on how you're talking about it, to be honest. If you're talking about the lawlessness of the time, then it's the Wild West. If you're talking about, you know, the fact that it's from long ago or, you know, a while ago, then it's the Old West. Just kind of depends on
makes sense, yeah.
How you want to present it.
So what was life like during these times?
You know, the thing is Deadwood had no law. You know, it was a lawless place. And that was very attractive to a lot of people. But it wasn't the best place to go. I mean, the winters were very harsh. And, you know, in the summertime, you know, you're basically looking at a big mud puddle. And it was just a mess, you know, really. And, you know, we had all kinds of, you know, tuberculosis and, you know, scarlet fever and
smallpox. Yeah. I think the area was ravaged by various, diseases and plagues around that time.
Smallpox was one that really hit, Deadwood, pretty hard. So it was, not a very fun time. And of course, when you've got a place that's, you know, kind of lawless, you kind of don't want to be a person who's not an outlaw. You know, the place was pretty much run by the outlaws. And if, you know, you don't want to really be there if you're not an outlaw, because you stand to be one of the ones that suffers.
Well, why is there a community of Deadwood? What's there to, like, cause there to be a town? Like, why does this exist?
Well, there's an old phrase, there's gold in them there hills.
Oh, I think I've heard that before.
Yes.
Then they're Black Hills.
Yes, in the Black Hills there. There was a lot of gold, and there probably still is, and it created such gold fever that, of course, all the outlaws wanted to go there, but so did people who were just kind of tired of their, you know, current lives, wanted a fresh start. They all thought that they could go there and make their fortune. So you had people that were, you know, good citizens that wanted to come there and give services to the miners and things like that, such as, Seth Bullock, you know, he went there and started a hardware store, among other things, with his partner, Saul Starr. And it really made for a lot of great commerce in that sense. You know, you're supplying things that people need as people are congregating.
I believe that in its heyday, Deadwood had about 25,000 people and now has maybe lucky to have 2,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, it was jam-packed full of all kinds of sorts.
It looks like it's down in a valley. Yeah. So it's in the Black Hills, but it's a really pretty valley when it's not covered in snow.
Yeah, I mean, there it was, you know, they were trying to basically make you know, dirt roads and a kind of a main street and start making it into a town. And it was just a mess of mud, you know, at first. They slowly were able to start appointing people, you know, different sort of government style jobs, you know, maintaining things, and that helped it come along. And they were one of the first actually to put in telephone lines and things like that. It was kind of progressive in that sense. But like I said, you had people going there to kind of fill that gap of need when it comes to amenities and things like that. But you also had both lawless type people that were coming there to either try to get gold or steal gold or con people out of things. I mean, so it was really a crazy place, and you didn't know who you could trust.
Well, so you've talked about some of the kinds of people who went there. It wasn't really a family friendly place necessarily, fortune hunters and outlaws. Can you tell us, you've already mentioned a few people, but can you tell us about some of the interesting characters who lived in Deadwood during this time? And this makes me think of the TV show.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They really capitalized on it. There were a lot. I mean, one of the most notable is Wild Bill Hickok. Right by his side was Calamity Jane. So you've got, you know, already these kind of names that, you know,
his girlfriend.
No.
What?
No. They were great friends. And I think that she did love him with a huge amount of respect. She, if anything, wanted to be like him. She was, you know, notorious in her own sense, in her own right. So she didn't even need that sort of mentor, you know, relationship in any way, because, you know, she was a huge figure herself.
Definitely.
Now, so there was those two. There was a guy named Denver Charlie Utter. There was Seth Bullock, as was mentioned, and his partner, Sol Starr. You had the Earp brothers, Wyatt Earp and his brothers, come to town for a while. It was just, you know, almost a who's who of Old West famous names, legends, all spent some time at one point or another in Deadwood.
So Deadwood, is it purported to be haunted because of these people who once lived there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, like Teddy Roosevelt was another name somebody might have heard of before that guy. That's kind of the thing, is this was a place that, you know, was very rough living. It had some very big names coming through. And, you know, Wild Bill Hickok was shot in the back in Saloon Number 10, and it's and of course that goes along. It's kind of the origin, I guess you could say, of the old gunfighter syndrome. I think we've all heard about at this point, that some young guy's going to come in and shoot you in the back at some point.
Take your place.
Yep, and take your place. That's, I think, kind of where that originated, even though Jack McCall, the one who shot him, was not interested in taking his place. He just didn't like how he was treated by Wild Bill, but he kind of deserved it at the same time. But that's the thing, is Wild Bill always sat with his back to the wall so he could see who was coming through the door and be prepared for them. And he had a horrible gambling addiction. And when he went in there this particular night, there was only one chair open at the table, and it was with his back to the door.
Set up.
Yep. So that was it for him. But he was, you know, it was getting kind of bad. He was losing his eyesight and everything at that point. And so it was a little rough on him there. Mm. But contrary to what you see in the TV show, and I love the TV show. It really added my enjoyment of the TV show Deadwood. Really added to my excitement of going there. But a lot of things were wrong in the show, of course. And one of those is that Seth Bullock and Wild Bill got to be friends and things like that that never happened.
Poetic license.
Yeah, because I believe he was shot in the back like the day before Seth got there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was... It was a very short time just before Seth made it to Deadwood that mm-hmm. Wild Bill had already been killed, you know, shot in the back. So,
well, I believe that Calamity Jane died there too. So you've got a couple of famous, lots of famous people who lived there and famous people who died there too, who are still around, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Never,
I mean, there
never
is
quite left.
But never quite left. Now there still is a saloon number 10 there. I don't believe it's the same location as the original saloon, but there are ghost stories everywhere, and it makes the town a lot of fun. I mean, of course, it's a very big tourist trap, so of course there has to be different versions of attraction to the town. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got your gambling, and you've got the, you know, the sort of... you could say Renaissance fair aspect of it with a lot of people in Wild West costumes. And then you've got the We're Haunted aspect.
Well, like who'd want to stick around in the Podunk town like this after you got killed? Well, the Deadwood.
Yeah.
It's all makes sense.
Yeah, that's why Blake has been so quiet leading up to this. He's been plotting.
Yeah.
He has been waiting on that one.
Family plotting. Well, yep.
Yeah. So, Matt, you did this investigation, and I want to tell us about it and why you went there, because you've had a focus on a lot of cases in Colorado. So this was out of town, out of your neck of the woods. What took you there?
Well, and this was strange because the owners of the Bullock Hotel reached out and said, would you come up and do an investigation? And, you know, we'll take care of you. So, okay. Yeah, I'll come up. So it was a very, very long drive. It was January 18th of 2008. And guess what? Huge blizzard.
Yeah, I was about to say January in South Dakota. Yeah.
Yeah. So driving through Wyoming, stopped in a small town in Guernsey, Wyoming, trying to find a gas station that was open. Because it was almost a whiteout, and you know, I knew I didn't have enough fuel to get there. Couldn't find one open anywhere. So got back out on the road, and as I pulled out of town, they closed kind of the gate on the road, saying this highway is now closed. So they closed it behind me as I drove off. Yes. So I was like, oh, there's nothing isolating about that. So it was a treacherous drive getting over the hill and staring at the gas gauge as it gets lower and lower and lower. And finally reached the top of the hill before going down into Deadwood, because it is in a valley, and ran out of gas.
Oh, no.
Luckily.
Timing.
Yeah. Luckily, the streets were extremely slick, and I luged into Deadwood.
As you do.
Yeah, it was about a half a mile of luging down into Deadwood, and it was terrifying, and made it right up to the Bullock Hotel.
It was like something out of a movie.
It was. It was absolutely crazy, but it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we walk in the door, and they have this huge banner welcoming me hanging there. And it was like, wow, this is really bizarre. So, you know, immediately got, you know, hotel room and everything and just went to bed. It was just needed to get some rest to be prepared for the next day. Now, there's a bunch of stories about what is haunted there. And, you know, you always kind of wonder how much people have been prepped, you know, for, ooh, we're staying in a haunted hotel. Well, the banner welcoming us was one big tip-off for a lot of people, I think. But on top of that, when you walk up to the front desk to check in, there's a great big photo album sitting on the desk that is of pictures of ghosts that patrons have taken over the years. And so as you're checking in, you can leaf through and see all the ghosts and everything. And, you know, so it's an orb fest. To say the very least, and you know, other forms of bad photography. But it is interesting. You know, you can see people are being primed to look for ghosts immediately.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that I think a lot of people don't understand is even if you're skeptical and you're coming in as you know, basically a non-believer, with all the priming, you still have it in the back of your head. Wouldn't it be awesome if I actually caught evidence? You know, wouldn't that be awesome? And you don't admit that to anyone. In fact, edit that out from the show. I don't want anyone to know I said that. But no, yeah, everybody wants it to be true. So you are a little primed going into it. And that in itself made for a fantastic trip, because it was about a week long that we're there. And they took great care of us. They gave us just basically meal vouchers for wherever we wanted to go eat. And
wow,
you know, we had our room, and you know, of course, we didn't need a car in that size of a town.
This makes me wonder, for you to be given the red carpet treatments. You've told me before, you've gone to places and turned up, and they've opened the door and looked at you with disappointment and said, "Where are the cameras?" So. Yes. Is this a case of they were hoping that you were going to turn up and find stuff and promote the place and you know, bring a camera crew?
Yes. It's one of those things where this was the height of ghost reality shows. This was in the middle of the frenzy.
Oh.
And, you know, we've showed up at houses, and they would have this huge spread of like a buffet in the living room set up for us.
Where's your plumber's truck?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But and one lady was like, where are the cameras? And it was like, oh, I think you have the wrong impression. But at Deadwood, they had full respect. They knew just how important I am. And so they treated me with the respect I deserve.
Yeah.
Or it may have been that they were hoping for more publicity. And I did my best to give it to them. I mean, we did a live show of my live podcast, and we did a live stream of some of the investigation. And
you actually caught some phenomena, didn't you, during that show? Tell us about that.
It was crazy. Well, the basement was now known as Seth's cellar. It became an ad hoc sort of smallpox ward. And the children that came down with smallpox, that's where they were kept, you know, and treated. And a lot of the prostitutes and everything in the town actually became caregivers during that time. It seems like nuns and prostitutes are the best caregivers ever. And it worked out really well for that down there. And they took good care of them. But
that seems like a choice between all or none.
There's said to be a little girl named Sarah down there, and her sometimes her mother is down there as well, and this little ghost girl will sometimes lure children away from their parents to come play with her downstairs in the basement. Now that sounds like the perfect lead into a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then, strangely, it seems like the ghost of Seth Bullock himself will lead the child back to their parents. And there's been reports of them seeing, you know, a child holding their hand in the air, like they're holding someone's hand, coming back to them. And they're like, what were you doing? It's like, oh, well, that tall man told me I needed to come back to you guys. And there was no one there. So really fun stories, just great fun stories. So there's a story about a coffee machine, because the Seth's cellar is basically a kind of a meeting place. It's also they start their ghost tours there. So there's lots of chairs for people to sit and listen to a little talk before they go on their ghost tour. But there's also a
to get primed.
Yeah, primed. And to prime even further, there's a fully stocked bar. And
spirits.
Yes. And there's also a big coffee machine. But during most of the year, when the weather's bad, all that's kind of like shut off to the public. So one of the claims is that occasionally the coffee maker would just turn on in the middle of the night and start brewing coffee.
Creepy.
And so the sleepy ghosts need a little, because, you know, they're supposed to be awake at night and sleep during the day. But These ghosts need a little helper
nocturnal,
to get through, apparently.
Yeah. But I want you to tell us about what happened during the recording of the radio show.
So the bar is said to have different types of activity down there in the basement. And also, since children were down there, it said that if, you know, any children's toys or anything down there would get moved. So we brought along with us not children's toys. You might say, hey, those are Nerf balls. But no, they were ballistic balls. Very professional tool in ghost hunting. And I put two of them probably about 9 inches apart on the bar. And in the next room where the chairs were, I put one on one of the chairs.
Now, when you say ballistic balls, are they actually made of metal?
A ballistic ball is a foam ball.
Okay. So when you said Nerf, it's that kind of material, that soft, squishy.
Kind of a little more firm, but we're starting to make it sound like these are fun, and they're not. This is professional.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. They're very serious Nerf balls in a bar to find ghosts. Got it.
Yes. Yes.
But you were filming this looking for activity.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and WagOn.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley. Not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Yeah, so the one sitting on the chair was really hard to get it to stay because the chair, you know, the seat on the chair was just at a slight slope going backward, you know, going back toward the back of the chair. So it was hard to get the ball to stay there without it rolling back. But, you know, finally got it to sit there precariously, and it stayed there. So during the broadcast, the two balls that were on the bar, the one that was kind of on the right very quickly rolled over toward the one on the left, and about an inch away from it stopped dead. And so everyone in the casino, because it was a working casino, saw that happen, and also everyone watching the live stream. So we ran it back and we replayed it. We had this big group of people around us watching it as we're replaying this footage, and you know, it's going out on the live stream, and suddenly it vanishes. The file vanished. And I'm like, okay, I don't know how that happened. But you know, I've got, you know, a data recovery software here. So, give me some time and I'll be able to recover. Maybe somehow it got clicked into the trash or something. So I ran all this data recovery software, and, you know, and it was finding stuff that, you know, I had thrown away and deleted, you know, a year previous. And that file was not there. It completely vanished, and have no idea why. Is it paranormal? Absolutely 100%. I don't know. I would tend to say probably not, but it was a fantastic thing to catch, especially when you're primed and in this haunted place, and it's all very exciting. So about 10 seconds, though, after that ball rolled over in the other room where the other ball was, it rolled uphill off the front of the chair. And that footage I still have. That one didn't vanish for some reason, but it was nowhere near as exciting as the other one. So don't know what happened there, but it was really cool. It was very cool to have that happen. Now, other things that happened there, I'll talk about these fun things before I talk about things that I was able to debunk while we were there. In the room that I was in, that I stayed in, the first night of investigating, it was about 2 in the morning, and I had to go to the bathroom. So I ran upstairs, and while I was in the bathroom, in my room, it was kind of strange because it had like brownish sort of shag pile carpeting. You know, I mean, that was like an inch long. I mean, it felt great on bare feet, you know, to walk on this. But as I'm in the bathroom, I'm hearing the very distinct sound of cowboy boots walking on a hardwood floor right outside the bathroom door. So I'm like, all right, who's messing with me? You know, and I threw the door open and no one was there. And wow. I ran to the door, the front door of the room, and I looked out and there's no one in the hallway, you know, and I'm looking at the floor going, wait a minute, this is carpeting. This doesn't make sense. So I set up a microphone in the room to try to record everything. And I left the room. As I walk away, I'm about 5 feet away from the room. I hear a click behind me and I turn around and look, and the door to my room opens, you know, probably about a foot. I'm like, okay, that's weird. I pulled it closed again. I made sure it was, you know, locked and wasn't going to pop open. And I, you know, jostled it around and, okay, it was fine. I walked away. Nothing happened. At no point during the investigation that all of the days that I was there, did I ever walk up to my room and see the door open. And it was always closed and there was never a problem. But the next night I'm there and, we're downstairs investigating. And I realized that there's a couple of things up in the room that I needed for the investigation. So I, you know, like corn chips and salsa. I ran up there to get these things and I stopped into the bathroom. And while I was in there, I'm hearing these footsteps walk across the floor again. Now, of course, I'm thinking, could it be, you know, water pipes, you know, kind of rattling or something? But it was such a distinctive sound and the cadence was just human enough that it did not sound like pipes rattling or anything. So I threw the door open, nothing there. Looked down the hallway, nothing there. Ran the recording back since I put a mic in there and it was on the recording. And if I can dig that up, Blake, I will send it over to you so you can include it in if you want.
Hey, that'd be cool.
Yeah. So yeah, cool. I have the recording of those footsteps.
Everyone listening to this is going to, or probably going to be thinking, it's just another member of your team, or it's these people that you're talking about who were in the casino. It's just another person somewhere.
Right. Now, the people that were down in the casino weren't, we were the only ones actually staying in the hotel during this time. The casino was open, but no one was allowed, you know, up in the upper levels, but us. Mm-hmm. Number two, it was all carpeted. It was, you know, your normal kind of threadbare carpeting in the hallways. But in the rooms, it was that thicker carpeting and there was just no hardwood anywhere. And so it was just very strange. Now, again, what was it paranormal? Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what it was. There's probably a lot more logical explanations than paranormal ones, to be honest. But again, with all the priming, that was fun. And it was fun to get it on tape. or on, you know, get it recorded.
I mean, be blunt, it sounds as good as any of the evidence you ever see on those shows.
Better.
Yeah. It was better.
Yeah. It's more than has ever happened to me in all my years of investigations.
Me too. Yeah. But it was better evidence than you ever hear on those shows. But so again, I walk out into the hall, and this time I make sure the door's pulled closed. I jostle it, make sure it's locked. Now these were the ones where you used actual keys to open them. So it wasn't like a card.
Yeah.
Or anything. How quaint.
That's very old fashioned.
Really old fashioned. I actually even took a picture of my, my key with the little thing on it. It says Bullock Hotel. But anyway, so I made sure it was locked. I made sure that I couldn't get it open no matter how I jostled it. And I'm like, okay, cool. I walked away about 5 feet away. Click. Door opens.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking
must
that
have
I'm
been sick.
Being messed with. I know I'm being messed with somehow. And which is still a possibility. I mean, they wanted us to find something haunted there. Yeah, it's possible.
That's an interesting thought that it could have been a setup. Yeah.
Totally. And I mean, so many things happened while we were there that it does make you wonder. But a lot of the things were things that you really wouldn't know how to fake if you were going to fake it.
Matt, I want you to tell us about that resident psychic.
All right. Now, of course, in a situation like this, there's going to be a resident psychic. And there's going to be somebody dressed, and she was in period dress for this, and the actor playing Seth Bullock as well was there. Mm-hmm. So me and another team member named Mark, we were staying there talking with them as they're telling us about all the, you know, things that she feels, you know, from her amazing sensitivity. And both Mark and I felt the entire building shake. It felt like a tremor, you know, an earthquake. And we're both reaching to grab something to stabilize ourselves. Mm-hmm. Neither the sensitive psychic or the actor playing Seth Bullock noticed at all. They were looking at us like, what's wrong?
Not so sensitive,
it seems. But yeah, and it could have been anything. It could have been, a train in the distance. It could have been something mechanical in the building that kicked on or off. It could have been a snow plow because there was some snow, and it's hard to say, but it felt like the whole building just was like there was an earthquake, and it terrified us. And neither of those two felt anything. And I thought that was a very interesting thing. Some of the other stories there, there's two with phantom writing on mirrors.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. One, there's a mirror at the top of a stairway that is said to be original and authentic. And the thing is that when you look at it, it just looks like a mirror. But if you get at certain angles and take pictures of it, you'll get a picture of like an anarchy symbol, or you'll see a Maltese cross, which I always thought was an interesting combination because one's about anarchy and one's about, you know, fascism. So don't really go together.
No ghostly faces or hands. That's the kind of thing I've often heard about.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did stick a big handprint on one of them just to see if anybody else would say anything about it. No, just cleaned it off and moved on. So that was a very interesting thing. And then in the mirror in Bully's Bar, they sometimes would, you know, people taking photos would capture a picture of this like green sort of in midair sort of writing that no one could seem to understand what it was saying. So we'll tackle the first one. The antique original piece, the mirror, was not. And when no one was looking in the middle of the night, I pulled it apart and saw that it was the mirror itself was from Walmart. And the backing on it was held on with a long kind of like splashes of glue. And so on these long streaks where they had the glue, it had eaten away from the reflective surface from the mirror. And when you would take a picture of it and that flash would go, you would see where that glue was on the other side.
Nice.
that's why you would see this Maltese cross, because it was just, you know, the crisscrossing of the glue lines. So in Bully's Bar, I looked at one of these photos that had this, you know, crazy writing in it. And I also realized that, you know, people tend to put their cameras on the wrong setting if they want to get a picture in low light. You know, they put it in portrait mode. So basically, this picture had no flash, and it, you know, the light that got into the camera, the shutter didn't close in time. I'll just put it that way. So right. They moved the camera, the shutter was still open, and so you get these kind of streaks. But what was this glowing green thing? I mean, that doesn't explain that. Until I turned around and saw the exit sign above the door.
Which was illegible, but glowing in a weird green way. Got it.
Yeah. Yes. Ectoplasm.
Yes.
Exitoplasm.
I think I still have a picture of that I can supply as well. One of the other big things is in Theodore Roosevelt's room, because he and Seth Bullock were great friends, and he had his own room there. And I think it was either his room or Seth Bullock's room. I can't remember, but the clock in that room, didn't work, but it was like this old clock, and it would chime at very weird times. And, which didn't make sense because the clock wasn't working. So, you know, again, pulled it apart. Saw that most of the innards were out except for the chimes. And any kind of jostling would have them go ding.
Oh, you know, wow.
Practically any jostling. So you'd be walking around the room and cause the slightest bit of vibration and ding. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's simple, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that simple. Now, we had other things like that coffee machine that would start up, did actually start up. You know, started spitting out water in the middle of the night. So that was a strange one. We had the weird thing with the balls moving.
So you've told us about these strange things that have happened. So Matt, what actually happened to your balls?
Well, you know, if I had a nickel for every time I was asked that question,
you wouldn't have very much, but yeah.
I would have a nickel. Well, that's a great question. First thing I do want to make clear is these are my balls. These weren't anybody else's balls.
I don't think that was under dispute, but anyway, yeah.
Well, you know, that I actually brought these balls into the situation. You know, they are my balls. And so I want the idea that it could have been someone else's balls that I was unfamiliar with.
Enough.
Or that, you know, maybe weren't, you know, perfectly round or something, that I wouldn't know about these balls. But these were my balls and I knew them pretty well. And I packed them myself for the trip. And here's what I think may have happened. Now, I will say that from examining my balls when putting them in the places, I didn't see anything strange about them. But if we're going to use Occam's razor and really shave down these balls, what we have to think about is the fact that they were very compressed when being packed. And they had in the cold weather, a 9-hour trip. And we know how cold weather and being packed tightly can make balls shrink. So they're very compressed foam ballistic balls. And when you pull them out and they're kind of free to expand again, they do take a while. You know, it's not something, they don't just go poof and come back to their regular size. They take a while to kind of re-expand, and they may not expand equally all at once, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So as we had, placing my balls on the chair, and I just placed one ball on the chair. It, was very stubborn, I think, but I finally got it to sit on the chair without moving.
Right.
And at the same time, over on the bar, they were, you know, like I said, about 9 inches apart and sitting there. So what I think may have happened is that it warmed up a few degrees down there, just a few. Mm-hmm. And it was enough to make, you know, them expand near the same time. Fine. So the one that was on the bar would have expanded a little bit, but maybe not evenly. So expanded enough to kind of make it roll. Mm-hmm. But then one side that didn't expand as much would have been a little more flat. So it could have rolled right over onto that flat side and stopped suddenly because of that flat edge. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of the wall, there was the ball on the chair. Mm-hmm. And if that one just increased in size a little bit during that same time, absolutely it could roll, you know, forward, depending on how it, you know, sort of increased in size. You know, the bottom line being, you know, is it more likely that the place is haunted by somebody who's pushing balls around?
You know, sad afterlife.
Well, yeah. I don't think the afterlife is playing with my balls. I think that my balls were just expanding at an uneven rate. That's my guess.
That's as good a theory as any, and I think better than the idea of a ghost.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's we'll go with that.
Matt, I think you've mentioned to me too that people claim that they smell perfume in the hotel, or they smell cigars.
Yes.
That kind of thing. And I've heard those claims a lot myself over the years too.
You said it was a casino, right?
Yes.
Okay, just putting it together in my head, see where you're going with this.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Exactly.
Old-fashioned perfume, though.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, it is actually hard, especially when you're primed, to identify certain smells. They can really affect you. Like Karen and I experienced up at the Stanley Hotel, where everybody thought they were smelling the cigar smoke. And what it turned out to be is someone had a hot plate in their room and they were making bacon cheeseburgers.
Wow.
Sure, there's no smoking in the hotel, but there's also no having a hot plate in your room making cheeseburgers either. Mm-hmm. But that's what the smell was, but people were swearing that it was cigar smoke.
Context for them.
Yeah, and when we stumbled onto the guy, you know, I mean, he was cool about it. He's like, oh, you want one? But
I mean, they're both unhealthy practices, but
exactly. Yeah, and then we had another one where people were taking picture of a doorknob because this doorknob had these like flashing sort of orb lights that were red, green, and blue then when they looked through their camera at it.
Ooh.
Yeah, no one thinking about the fact that RGB stands for red, green, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to LCD displays on your camera. But so, of course, you're not going to see it with your own eyes. And when you look through your camera, you do see it. Yeah, you might kind of consider that there's something going on there.
It's more of a technological than a spiritual explanation.
Yes, yep. Exactly. So Deadwood was an amazing trip. It was great. And, you know, some of the things were disappointing to find out that the show was not accurate on. Because I really wanted to go to the Gem Theater where Al Swearengen, you know, would have been in the past the owner, and it was just nothing like I imagined, and they had no ghost stories either, and I thought for sure that they would, but we got to investigate several buildings there, one of them being Saloon Number 10. There was an Asian restaurant there that was supposedly haunted, and the Bullock Hotel. But it was great being primed like that, really, and secluded, you know, with the town practically being shut down because of this blizzard. It was great fun to be in those conditions and let your imagination run wild.
Yep. And yeah, I think that's such a fun thing for skeptics and believers alike to go and do investigations and have some weird experiences, however you're going to look at it. I mean, for most people, they're going to have some kind of paranormal interpretation, but it seems like you for the most part, came up with natural explanations for everything that happened.
I believe we did for most everything. And anything that we couldn't explain, we didn't declare it haunted.
Were they disappointed then? Because if they had you coming there for a paranormal investigation, seems like that's what they wanted you to find.
This is what it's like when you go to these places. This place doesn't seem haunted. Yeah, it seems haunted. No, it doesn't seem haunted. Yeah, it does seem. Yeah, you're right. It is haunted. That's kind of what you get.
Well, hear what they want to hear.
So you hear a little bit of motivated reasoning, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, you know, when we had reports from the USGS up at the Stanley Hotel saying that there was not large deposits of magnetite and quartz on the property that were causing paranormal activity. But there was some in the dirt, that there was, you know, basically powdered forms of these things in the dirt to a small extent. So we said, see, your theory is not correct. Here's what's really going on. Here's the proof. And they ran off saying, see, it is here. Because yeah, it was in the dirt, they drew their own conclusions that were completely unscientific and incorrect.
Well, I guess one thing I was a little confused about was the haunting effects that you were looking for. Were these paired up with particular narratives about who was allegedly responsible, or were these sort of generic or general purpose ghostly things?
Yeah. With all those famous names.
Both. There was both. There's so many ghosts there, they couldn't tell you, you know, which ghost was causing it. But often anything in the basement was going to be either Seth or this girl, Sarah. They had smells of, like Karen was saying, smells of lilac, roses, and cigar smoke reported throughout the hotel. And it is a 24-hour day casino.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
But
regular people.
Yeah.
Does anyone see Calamity Jane then?
I have not heard of any Calamity Jane. And I don't know if it's just
she'd be a really good poltergeist thing. I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Come on.
I personally think it was her who was playing with the balls on the bar. Yeah, you know, it's really difficult to say. I mean, some people are saying, oh, this is, you know, Seth Bullock, and oh, this is, Wild Bill Hickok, and this is, you know. But
whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's actually you not being skeptical enough, being a little too credulous.
Is a really incredible place, and it's on my bucket list. I want to get there and check out some of the claims someday. How about you, Blake?
Yeah, I've heard of it so many times, but I hadn't actually ever really looked at pictures of it. It looks like a really nice place to visit when it's not winter.
The town is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And if you've seen, are you well acquainted with the show or not?
No, all I know is c***ers.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. But the thing is if you watch the entire series and the movie and everything else, you will want to go to Deadwood big time. Another personality that was big there is someone that was also big in Denver, and that is Soapy Smith. And so I don't know if you've heard of that name before.
I have. I don't remember why, but I've definitely heard of Soapy Smith.
Yeah, Soapy Smith. He would basically there'd be, you know, Soapy Smith and another guy. And what would happen is he'd be out there selling soap to people. And, you know, he had all kinds of scams, but the one that he got his name for was selling soap. And what he would do is he would basically, like, in one piece of soap, have like a $5 bill inside of it. And then he would, you know, say, oh, you know, you get a prize, you know, when you buy this soap, you know, there's prizes in it and all this kind of stuff. And this guy, I'll buy one. And he comes up and buys it. And there's a $5 bill in here. And then everybody would swarm Soapy Smith to buy soap that had nothing in it. It wasn't even good soap. And so he got a name for all these little scams that he would run. And he was quite a violent person on top of everything else and was pretty notorious. And I think we even have a bar or a pub here in Denver called Soapy Smith's. And
what a character.
Yeah, he was quite a character.
I was waiting for Blake to make a joke about Lye.
Oh. I was actually surprised. He was born in Cayuga County down here in Georgia, so, and made it all the way to Alaska before he died. So
yeah,
that's a...
Oh, he interesting character.
He got around
out of just about every town that he ever went to.
Yeah, he got he was only 37 when he died, but man, he traveled everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
interesting people. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Matt, and for telling us about the investigation. And so yeah, now I definitely want to go and visit.
And of course we'll put links to things in the show notes
and stuff,
and there may be inserts of sounds and things. And then, if you're interested in watching the show, Deadwood, I'll put a link to that in the show as well, in the notes.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that, Matt. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that was great. It was great, and you know, there's so much more even to the story because it was days long. But those are some of the highlights.
Days going by.
Monster Dog.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard an interview with paranormal investigator Matt Baxter about his work in Deadwood, South Dakota. Check the show notes for lots of links to historical figures from the city, as well as photos from Matt's work. Do you have questions about Matt's investigation? You can reach him by email at matt@monstertalk.org. Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Subtext, The Projection Booth, and The Daily Meditation Podcast. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk's theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Thank you for making our show a part of your listening life.
Been a Monster House presentation.